Good evening, Truth Seekers. Talking with Kathy here about some of these candidates' wives. Good evening, Truth Seekers. Mike Beloy here on the Nova M Radio Network. Thanks for spending some of your Friday night with us. We do appreciate it. Hang out for a while. We'll have a good time tonight.
I have to say, of all the candidates on either side of the aisle, I really believe that Elizabeth Edwards looks the most like a first lady. Don't you think? Well, Barack's wife's not bad. But in terms of looking like a first lady, I mean, Kucinich's wife is so hot, it's distracting. Fred Thompson's wife looks like the first lady of the evening here. Giuliani's going to have the hoe of the week in there, so it doesn't really matter. Don't you think so?
I really don't have an opinion on the who looks like a first lady. I'm
Elizabeth Edwards looks
okay,
like a first lady.
You got it. It has been a weird day, as you could tell by Kathy jumping in there talking about the first lady. So what brought this up is Fred Thompson, who is not going to be president of anything, is on. We were watching a little bit of him on Larry King. With his child bride, of course I should talk, right? One of the little listening posts out there tonight is in Mayflower, Arkansas. The group is the progressive radio Friday nights with Mike Malloy is alive and well in Mayflower, Arkansas, and it's a blast. Despite the cold weather, we have 54, 55 people. The mission was 2 canned food items for the food drive, so we have over 100 cans of food. We are dancing to the music of the great Ike Quebec and waiting for the show to start. P.S. Please have at least one good rant. We love that. Mayflower Progressive Club, signed by Mayflower Mike. Well, I don't know. What's to rant about tonight? Really? Well, I watched, like most of us, no matter when I turned on the television today, it was the hostage situation, which is nothing to make light of, in a little town in New Hampshire. And somebody sent me a link to the local television station there, so we just kept that on the computer most of the day for the updates. But that was, again, no offense meant because with what I'm going to say, because that's a very dangerous situation. You never know when one of these nutballs turns out to be a real suicide bomber. But aside from that, I got the impression today at some point after the coverage was on for like 4 or 5 hours, you know, this is, as long as nobody dies... And nobody did, amazingly. As long as nobody gets hurt, no one did, amazingly. Then it's a win for everybody, right? The cable television networks, they love this kind of stuff. They love it. That's why they keep the cameras on it all day. It's inexpensive. They can call up experts. There's always a possibility that something's going to go boom, which is what television loves. It's what television lusts after. That's why whenever there's an airplane circling an airport and the landing gear won't go down, they keep their camera on that sucker until it does land, hoping. Ooh, maybe, just maybe. How many people are on board? Ooh, damn. So the television people won today. The local anchors in the town where this occurred won because for the first time in their lives, the only time in their lives, national coverage all afternoon. This is, if you've not worked in television, then you don't know how important it is when you're in a market of 30 or 40,000 people like these people were or are, to be picked up by CNN, picked up by MSNBC, and carried all day. It's like, oh my God. The pig man, Rush Limbaugh, wins because it gives him material for comedy for the next week or two. Hannity and Combs win because it gives this poor crippled Alan Combs something to lean up against as Hannity lashes and beats on Hillary and probably at some point suggests that she put the man up to it. It gives the local constabulary a win because they can dress up like monsters and like they're an invading force from some other star system. And surround everything. If they can't, first they surround the campaign headquarters, then they surround the block that the campaign headquarters sits on, then they surround downtown within which is the block where there's campaign headquarters, then they surround the town, which is not hard to do when you only have 30,000 people, and then they start calling in backup. It's a win for the Democratic Party because what did they get all day? Focus on Hillary Clinton campaign headquarters, hoping, of course, that nobody gets hurt. And, of course, it's a win for Hillary Clinton because at the end of this potentially deadly situation where nobody's hurt, nobody's killed, Hillary can express the fact that she talked with the families of the hostages, and she's so glad that the day wound up as it did. It's a win for the other Democratic candidates because they can obliquely suggest that, see, a President Hillary is very polarizing, and it's a win for the Republican candidates because they can say, oh my God, look at this. Look at this. A guy wants to talk to Hillary. Can you imagine what's going to happen if she's president and some Arab terrorist wants to talk to her? And in a sense, I guess it's a win for this program because it gave me something to talk about for the past 6 minutes. Oh, and Shell sent me an email, said, in case you missed the CNN coverage of the hostage situation, Wolf Blitzer was interviewing somebody. I think it was a former hostage negotiator for the FBI or something like that. Anyway, Wolf said, shouldn't the police shoot him in the foot? I swear to Buddha. The guest tried not to laugh, but did anyway and said, no, Wolf, that wouldn't be a good idea. Wolf should have stayed in the U-boat business. Former German U-boat commander Wolf Blitzer trying today to figure out a solution to that. Shouldn't you shoot him in the foot? Wolf, that happens in movies. It doesn't really happen in real life. And the last thing you want to do if you got somebody with a vest on that's full of dynamite or other explosives is shoot him in the foot! God! I got a couple of emails here from G, the guy called last night with all kinds of, really had his ass up in the air about the reading of the Declaration of Independence that I did last night. Well, which is fine. I mean, after a while, though, it gets a little weird. Somebody who, and obviously G is not from here. I mean, that's safe to say. And someone who wants to tackle the Declaration of Independence, have at it. I mean, I've gone after the language myself. And the reality of the framers of the U.S. Constitution, who happen to be some of the people that signed the Declaration. Not all the same, but, a few. But when somebody like G, the caller, tried to do what he did, it's everything I can do just by my tongue and shut up and let the person have their say. Obviously, he's coming from a point of anger because of, and rightly so, of U.S. aggression and imperialism, and that's understandable. Since even though the framers tried to warn us against foreign involvements, against foreign entanglements, against foreign treaties, stay the hell home and take care of this country, right? Even though that was the attitude, that all went right down the commode when Teddy Roosevelt decided to have a ship blown up in Havana Harbor and make it look like it was done by the Spanish. And that began the era of really, really intense global U.S. imperialism. So I can understand Xi's comments, but on the other hand, it's kind of off-putting. And a couple of listeners picked up on that and sent me an email, so I'll let them speak to that phone call when we come back. I'm Mike Malloy. This is Nova M.
Flying monkey, more powerful than a special prosecutor. It's Mike Malloy on Nova M Radio.
21 past the hour. Ron, who is still lost in PA, wrote, Mike, if Xi's claims are based on this section of the Declaration, quote, he has excited domestic insurrections amongst us and has endeavored to bring on the inhabitants of our frontiers, the merciless Indian savages, whose known rule of warfare is an undistinguished destruction of all ages, sexes, and conditions, end quote. If that's what he's referring to, what they are saying here has to do with King George and the British Army inciting natives to attack the colonists. This is Divide and Conquer 101. The mercilessness of the so-called savages is noted because, as is inferred, they killed women and children at the prompt of the Brits. So I wouldn't say this was an entree to the genocide that did in fact occur by the hands of our ancestors. I think it would be fair to say that Xi has misread the intent of the Declaration. Bill in Portland. Mike, don't call your show because it's delayed here in Portland. Wanted to comment on Xi's criticism of the U.S. Declaration of Independence. Yes, the Founding Fathers were racist, elitist, and blind to the harm European and European-American policies caused to other peoples. But the point Xi misses about the Declaration is that the Declaration is one of those documents, along with the U.S. Constitution, the Rights of Man, the Magna Carta, among others, which transcends the faults of the flawed, fallible human beings who created it. It is precisely this characteristic of the Constitution that makes me so cautious about making wholesale changes to it. As flawed as they were, the members of the Continental Congress and the Constitutional Conventions represented an amalgamation of political and social genius seldom seen in world history, and they gave us a flexible system of government that could be adapted to meet the needs of changing times, mores, and culture without sacrificing civil liberty or good government. Current events seem to justify Franklin's apprehension that we might not be capable of preserving the governmental structure the founders gave us. But the Declaration of Independence and the Constitution are not to blame for the sins of the U.S. government, its leaders, or the people it governs. We interpret and implement the principles of freedom, equality, tolerance, and good government embodied in these documents. And by the way, in which we do so, we can fashion a democratic republic based on the highest ideals of humanity that surpasses all that has gone before. Or we can create a petty, recriminating, oppressive police state which denies civil liberties and holds certain classes down in order to serve a small, elite ruling class. The Declaration of Independence was not intended to oppress. It was intended to improve the lot of humanity by citing the grievances of the North American colonists against the British Crown and asserting a general right of all citizens to change their government and the form of that government when it no longer served the needs of the common citizen. The U.S. Constitution was intended to create a new government and to give that government a form that could be adapted. Both documents were, in my view, wildly successful. In literature, it is common to distinguish between authors' intent and the so-called reception, the latter being the effect which a work of literature has on its audience, whether intended or not. We must approach the Declaration and the Constitution in this same way. No matter how noble or ignoble the intent, the deeds, or other personal characteristics of the individuals who created them, these documents have raised the bar in defining good government, not just for the United States, but for all nations. Their impact, the document's impact, will outlive the American experiment, whether that experiment ultimately succeeds or fails. We must separate the documents and their actual impact on the world from the persons, or finally even the nation, that created them. That, I think, is what you intended to point out by quoting the Declaration of Independence. That is what I would have loved to hear you say to G. That is what I think far too few Americans realize or know how to value, which is one of the reasons our republic is in such perilous circumstances right now. Signed, Bill. Well, I would have loved to have said all that to G, too, Bill. But, you know, when you're right in the middle of a... were we near the end of the program, Kathy? Or no? But when you're right in the middle of a program, and no offense, Bill, but you're trying to juggle, you know, topics and phone calls and some person on the phone who's, you know, just actually going off on you because you read the Constitution, or not me. I don't think G was going off on me. Well, maybe he was. Not that I care. But when you're involved in all that, it's, you know, it's a little bit difficult to come up with such a well-thought-out, erudite response such as the one you've written here. So, you know, yeah, I wish I could answer off the cuff in as comprehensive a manner as your email. But I appreciate what you had to say, Bill. Thank you. Time for another break. We have our tonight's Religious Crazies report coming up as soon as we come back from this break. We also have something that's going to warm the heart of most people in this country, no matter what their political stripe is, who are terrified that fighting back against global warming is going to interfere with the lifestyle that we here in America so dearly love. And also, Biden has promised, Senator Joe Biden has promised unequivocally that impeachment will result if Bush bombs Iran. Somebody needs to tell Biden that impeachment does not arise in the Senate. Oh, never mind. All that and more when we come back. Stay with us. I'm Mike Malloy. This is Nova M.
Seekers, time to snuggle up with your favorite screamer, more Mike Malloy.
That I'm proud to be an American, where at least I know I'm free, and I'm born.
25 before the hour. Freedom of religion, boy, it's a great thing, especially in this country. Excuse me. Another child, member of this Jehovah Witnesses sect cult, who died a few hours after a judge ruled that the 14-year-old, sick with leukemia, had the right to refuse a blood transfusion that probably would have helped him. Doctors say he probably could have lived 6, 7, 8 more years. 70% chance of surviving the next 5 years with the transfusion and other treatment. Dennis Lindbergh died Wednesday night at Children's Hospital, a regional medical center. His father, Dennis Lindbergh, told the Seattle PI. The hospital spokesman said she couldn't confirm or deny anything. But earlier Wednesday, the Sagatt County Superior Court Judge John Meyer had denied a motion by the state to force the boy to have a blood transfusion. The judge said the eighth grader, quote, knew he's basically giving himself a death sentence, end quote. The judge said during the hearing, quote, I don't believe Dennis's decision is the result of any coercion. He is mature and understands the consequences of his decision. I don't think Dennis is trying to commit suicide. This isn't something Dennis just came upon. And he believes with the transfusion he would be unclean and unworthy. Unquote. Judge, you're crazier than a loon. You really are. You're a moon bat. You don't think Dennis's decision, this 14-year-old kid, that his decision to turn his back on life is the result of any coercion? Are you out of your freaking mind? This child has been coerced, brainwashed, and forced to become a member of a cult since the day he sucked in his first breath. Judge? A 14-year-old? This judge should be immediately removed from the bench. Get his ass out of there. Come on, Seattle folks. You've got a freak on the bench. Now, as far as allowing someone to kill themselves, fine, but not a 14-year-old. But you see, Mike, it doesn't work that way. Doctors had diagnosed the boy's leukemia. This was fast-acting a month ago. They began chemotherapy. They stopped a week ago because his blood count was too low. The boy refused the transfusion on religious grounds. The boy refused it? The boy refused it? Where were his parents? His parents, who do not have custody, flew from Boise, Idaho to be at the hearing, believed their son should have had the transfusion, and suggested he had been unduly influenced by his aunt, who is also a Jehovah's Witness. The aunt declined to talk about the case. The boy's father told the newspaper the ruling shocked him, but after visiting his son, he decided not to appeal. He said doctors told him Wednesday evening that the boy, unconscious since Tuesday, had likely suffered brain damage. Unconscious since Tuesday, and the judge ruled Wednesday. I cannot get my mind around these kinds of stories. You know, why not when somebody is deathly ill like that, you know, why not just bring in some priests and start chanting? Why not wave hemlock branches over his body to cast out the evil spirits? 14-year-old kid. I've had several 14-year-old kids. I have. And I'm here to tell you right now that some of them are incapable of making a decision as to what to take to class for lunch, much less how to decide a matter of their own life or death. Do you know who's responsible for this kid's murder? His aunt. That's who. Auntie Crazy. And I don't know what the full story is, why the parents would have turned this child over to a psychopath. Jehovah's Witnesses, my ass. Good Lord! When will it ever stop? Oh, I know. When the last priest or last king is strangled with the entrails of the last priest, I know. Overseas, the madness continues with these Muslim freaks. Did you see the video today? Thousands of Sudanese armed with clubs and knives and frothing mouths and wild-ass eyes rallied Friday in a central square and demanded the execution of the British teacher because she allowed her students to name a teddy bear Muhammad. In response to this group psychopathic reaction, the teacher, Jillian Gibbons, was moved from the women's prison in Khartoum to a secret location for her safety. The protesters streamed out of mosques after Friday sermons as pickup trucks with loudspeakers blared messages against Gibbons. The evil emissary of Satan! She allowed her children to name a teddy bear Muhammad. The protesters massed in Central Martyrs Square outside the presidential palace, where hundreds of riot police were deployed. The police didn't try to stop the rally. Well, why should they? Which lasted about an hour. Shame! Shame on the UK! The protesters chanted. They called for Miss Gibbons' execution, screaming, "No tolerance! Execution! Kill her! Kill her!" Many protesters carried clubs, knives, and axes. A Muslim cleric at Khartoum's main martyrs mosque denounced Miss Gibbons during one sermon, saying she intentionally insulted Islam. The cleric said, "Imprisoning this lady does not satisfy the thirst of Muslims in Sudan." Jesus Christ. Ah! Kill her. Chop her into little pieces. Feed her to the dogs in the street. You sick bastards. I swear to God, I guess a fundamentalist Islam is the most vile, violent form of psychosis that's out there. The Hindus are close behind. Hindu fundamentalists, they'll find a Muslim fundamentalist and cut him into a million pieces and feed him to the alligators. And then, of course, somewhere in there, the Christian fundamentalists in this country who would like to do that sort of thing. They'd like to go to Leviticus and Numbers and Deuteronomy and get their marching orders. They'd like to. Oh, God. But we have secular laws in this country, at least we do tonight, that would put the Christian fundamentalists in prison, unless, of course, they belong to some wild-ass cult like the Jehovah's Witnesses, who say, "Well, taking a blood transfusion is eating blood, and it's not allowed." Yeah, you guys ought to go to a Catholic communion sometime if you really want to freak out. But you know, the Muslim fundamentalists, okay, having ranted now, I should back up a little bit and say, okay, why are they that way, these Muslim nutballs? Because they have no education. They have no worldview. They have no impression of life outside the terror that goes on inside their mosques. They have no understanding that that sort of attitude is just not conducive to good mental health. They live in some, you know, I sometimes say, well, they live in the 12th century. No, they don't. They don't live in any century. They live in some twilight zone. All religious fundamentalists do. Some strange, bizarre place populated and peopled by demons and dwarves and elves and orcs and gnomes and things that run around and snatch and bite you on your ankles and try to rip your eyes out and going to drag you into a hole down to hell. That's where they live. And you thought it was Khartoum. No, not at all. Give me a second to compose myself. This is NoVam Radio.
What you
Reality Radio for a Rational World. The Mike Malloy Show, only on Nova M Radio.
Ted, before the hour, we got a couple of Too Much Cappuccino Perino quotes for you that we're going to share with you coming back. Helen Thomas handed Dana Perino her own buttocks today. That was fun to listen to. How's the sound on that? Can you hear Helen pretty good? Oh, can you? Okay. We'll play that for you when we come back. For everybody out there, again, regardless of your political stripe or your sexual orientation or your race, those of you who are just, you know, like between a rock and a hard place, you want to keep on breathing, so the global warming thing has really got your attention. On the other hand, damn, you just don't want to give up, you know, some of those really neat conveniences that require the burning of fossil fuels, like, oh, I don't know, hair dryers, stuff like that. So it's just difficult, right? Well, guess what? According to Reuters News Agency, there is a report out. U.S. citizens will not have to drive less or read in the dark to slash greenhouse gas emissions by 2030. But, there's always a but, right? They will have to buy more efficient cars and appliances. Now, that report comes from two business groups in the U.S. Gee, there's a surprise. Jack Stevenson, a director of McKinsey & Company, a business consultant group, told reporters in a teleconference call from Washington, quote, "You may have different light bulbs and your car may be made of different materials, but basically we've assumed that consumer lifestyles stay constant," end quote. Mr. McKinsey published the report. It's called Reducing U.S. Greenhouse Emissions. How much at what cost? Where do these people come up with this? We happen to have those curly Q light bulbs in just about every socket in the house now, don't we, Kathy? Just about all of them. No, we haven't replaced them in those makeup light things up in the bathroom. But every light bulb in the house, what do you call those? The curly Q ones, huh? Halogen? Those are halogen? Really? Well, they last forever, obviously. And what else have we done? Well, not much, except when we take Molly to preschool now, we take her in a wheelbarrow. We wanted to get a mule, but they have city ordinance. I'm not making light of this, but Jesus, changing your light bulbs might help a little bit. I guess if everybody that didn't, what was it, about 6 months ago, Walmart said they're going to embark on a campaign to get everyone. What happened to that campaign? You know, I wouldn't buy snot at Walmart. I wouldn't buy anything at Walmart. I don't know where we got. Where do we get these? Drugstore? Home Depot? Oh, God. You just can't win, can you? But when you get a report put out by two business groups that says, guess what, America, you don't have to change anything. Your cars are going to have to be made out of different material. Instead of the plastic that they're made out of now, we're going to have to make them out of the bark and the tree stems and you know, leaves and stuff like that. And as far as your light bulbs, well, just switch them. Get those curly Q type that Malloy has and everything will be fine. What's wrong with these people? What is wrong? Not only are we going to have to change our lifestyles if we're serious about global heating, not only are we going to have to do that, but we're going to have to do it last month. And it's going to have to be horrendously dramatic. My changing my light bulbs is like standing on the Pacific Rim someplace in, I don't know, Seattle, and spitting into the ocean and saying, well, I just made the ocean deeper. Well, anyway, that should be very calming and reassuring to people who, that report, those two reports, that, you know, you really don't have to do anything to worry about. Change your light bulbs, drive a car with different structural material, and what else can you do? You know, just stop using your leaf blower, or if you do have one, make sure it's electric. No, you can't do that, because that works its way back to the power of, get one of these. What have I seen? A new hair dryer? these new hair dryers that they have stones in them and a little, what do they have in them?
They have little tourmaline crystals.
Tourmaline crystals that heat up.
They're ionic ceramic hair dryers. They're supposed to be faster, quieter, better for the environment, and make your hair shiny and pretty.
Yeah, okay. Okay.
I don't know. All I know is we're getting one for our daughter-in-law.
Oh, we are? Is that with the Curly Q light bulbs? Yeah, okay. The senator from Delaware, one of the senators from Delaware, Joe Biden, stated unequivocally today that he will move to impeach Bush if he bombs Iran without first gaining congressional approval. I guess it was last night. He spoke in front of a crowd of about 100 people at a forum held at the Seacoast Media Group, by the Seacoast Media Group. The forum focused on the Iraq war and foreign policy. When an audience member expressed fear of war with Iran, Biden said he does not typically engage in threats, but he had no qualms about issuing a direct warning to the Oval Office. Biden said, and his words were followed by raucous applause from a local audience, Biden said, quote, "The president has no authority to unilaterally attack Iran, and if he does, as Foreign Relations Committee Chairman, I will move to impeach." Is he talking about some kind of constitutional hiccup that we don't know about? When local resident Joel Karp asked Biden why not impeach now, given what he's already done, Biden said it was a valid point, but would be potentially counterproductive. Oh, my God! Biden said as chairman of the Foreign Relations Committee he will move to impeach. Hey, Joe, I don't think so. And besides, Biden is the top co-conspirator with Bush and Cheney in selling the Iraq invasion to Congress. Oh, God, these people make me sick. Stick around. We'll be back after the break. I'm Mike Malloy. This is Nova M Radio. Welcome back. It's about 7 minutes past the hour. Got an email here from John in Baptist, Louisiana. Is that a real town? Or is that an attitude? I don't know. Baptist, Louisiana. Or is it Baptiste? Anyway, John writes an answer to why the Sudanese were protesting in the streets today. John writes, "It was explained to me by my neighbor from Lahore, Pakistan. He told me that they protest as a form of socializing. They don't have pool halls, strip joints, or discos to pass the time in, so they play soccer and protest. Emotions get strong after Friday prayers, just like a good old Southern revival show. It's nothing new, just how the media presents it to us." No, I don't think so, John. I mean, if that's how it's done, okay, I'm not arguing with the explanation that you've been given by your neighbor from Lahore, Pakistan, but, you know, getting out into the streets after Friday services and raising aloft hatchets and machetes and cutting things and screaming for the blood of a female school teacher because her students named a teddy bear Muhammad is not exactly, to me, an example of a healthy outlet for pent-up religious fervor. I just can't kind of get that, John.
Don't they have any Ruby Tuesdays or
you'd think
CGI Fridays or... bowling alleys or places to go shoot rats.
Don't knock that. That's a lot of fun. Regarding the item we shared with you last night about firefighters being asked to take on the role of observers when they enter your home, either in an emergency rescue situation or because your house is on fire, and the Bush crime family's one of its chief acolytes, the cadaverous looking Chertoff of the devil. Yeah, that's Russian for of the devil, Chertoff. That's the origin of that name. With Homeland Security, the six fire chiefs in New York apparently have been given a special clearance so they can begin this process of spying on their fellow Americans. That's one of the reasons they made the Declaration of Independence, those wild-ass white guys, 236 years ago, because Americans were being asked to do things to their fellow colonials. Anyway, regarding that story, I got an email from Cynthia in San Jose, California, who writes, "Hi, Mike, I'm in the San Francisco Bay Area, and I can't readily listen to you live anymore." Rats. Yeah, I understand. "Nonetheless, I heard on the radio today that firemen are supposed to look for subversive books that American citizens might have in their libraries. Apparently, it is becoming illegal to own such books, and so I might as well freely confess my crime. I own and have read 1984 by George Orwell. I own and have read It Can't Happen Here by Sinclair Lewis. I own and have read books by Noam Chomsky, Al Franken, Molly Ivins, Joe Connison, Seymour Hersh, and others. Under Bush World, I am guilty of thought crime for having such books. To atone and get my mind right, let me now pledge allegiance. I pledge allegiance to President Bush, dear leader and hero of America, and to his rule for which he stands, one nation underfoot with total surveillance, mind control, and perpetual war for all." I mean, who needs the Constitution anyway? After all, it's just a stupid piece of paper. I know this because my new hero for life, President Bush, told me so. Now, I feel better. Thank you. Hey, Cynthia, I'm right there with you. Right there with you. Of course, the odd part is Cynthia can't hear what I'm saying. Well, maybe she's listening online. As you know, the other day in Annapolis, Maryland, at the Naval Academy, there was a Middle East Peace Conference. All sorts of posing and picture taking and a huge table and 60 nations and sheikhs and Muslims and Jews and Israelis and Palestinians and the shoe lady. And George Bush, great pictures. They're going to be blown up to poster size and put in his library when he retires next to the book. Well, there's a little postscript here from Jerusalem. The way it's reported is this. In unusually frank comments, Prime Minister Ehud Olmert warned in an interview published Thursday that the state of Israel is finished. His words, the state of Israel is finished if a Palestinian state is not created, saying the alternative was a South African-style apartheid struggle. What? What? The Prime Minister of Israel used the A word, apartheid? Well, now wait. Here in Atlanta, at the Carter Center, didn't we have about 40 Jews resign from the board of directors, honorary board of directors, because Jimmy Carter had the absolute temerity to publish a book on Israeli-Palestinian peace processes titled Palestine Peace, Not Apartheid, in which he maintained that Israel cannot achieve lasting peace with the Palestinians without withdrawing from the occupied West Bank and Gaza? Wasn't Jimmy Carter castigated and had his ass figuratively handed to him by columnist after Jewish columnist in this country who said that Jimmy Carter had committed the unimaginable sin, or is it a crime, of suggesting that what the Palestinian people are experiencing now is not unlike the apartheid experienced by black South Africans during the time of, oh, a bunch of them, but most notably P.W. Botha. So now, Prime Minister Ehud Olmert, who the last time I checked happens to be Jewish, said the state of Israel is finished if a Palestinian state is not created. Now, what does he mean by that? Is that a sudden outburst of compassion for the Palestinian people? Oh, hell no. It's a matter of demographics, that's all. Population curves. The population bomb that is building. How many people in that little strip, that sad strip of land now? About 7 million Jews. How many non-Jews? 5 million? 6? What happens, you see? And this is what Omer is referring to. This is what a lot of people have been referring to, but nobody pays attention to this. What happens when the Palestinian population reaches that tipping point where all of a sudden, if there is a one state, if there is a melding, a blending in Israel and the occupied territories, one state solution, what happens when all of a sudden the Palestinians become the majority? That's right. Everything changes. In the interview, Olmert said himself it was a vital Israeli interest to create, the Israelis are going to create, a Palestinian state due to the growing Arab population in the area. Olmert told Haaretz newspaper, quote, the day will come when the two-state solution collapses and we face a South African-style struggle for equal voting rights. As soon as that happens, the state of Israel is finished. End quote. Now, Jews are a solid majority inside Israel. They make up about 80% of the population of 7 million. But if the West Bank and Gaza are included, Arabs already make up nearly half the population. So, Olmert supports a withdrawal from much of the West Bank and parts of East Jerusalem. Israel's 1.5 million Arab citizens have the right to vote. But the estimated 4 million Palestinians in the West Bank and Gaza do not have Israeli citizenship or rights. So, and Omer is known as a hardliner. But he has repeatedly warned that Israel cannot remain both Jewish and democratic if it holds on to the West Bank and Gaza. Maybe Ehud Olmert is someone the Palestinians can do business with.
Don't go to bed angry. Let Mike Malloy do it for you on Nova M Radio.
We're 21 past the hour. So Joe Biden, you know, if Joe Biden were doing his job, Bush would already be impeached because Joe Biden, although he has no power to raise articles of impeachment, he could be lobbying his cellmates over in the House to do something about it, but this is absolute madness. If it's a classic if then statement, you know, it's nonsense. If he attacks Iran, then we'll get him impeached. If he attacks Iran, Joe, what, you're going to start impeachment proceedings then? He's already attacked two different countries. He's already overthrown two governments. I don't care that, in this context, Joe, I don't care that the two governments were your typical raving, mouth-breathing, maniacal governments, kind of like Cheney would run. The fact is, this out-of-control bastard has already invaded two countries. And what have you done? Huh? You were the chairman of the Senate Foreign Relations Committee, weren't you? In 2002, didn't you hold hearings that year on Iraq? And didn't you exclude the most credible voices against that war, people like Scott Ritter? Huh? Isn't that what you did, Joe, or am I just remembering something from a different universe? What? So, well, there's a difference now. Joe Biden's running for president, you see. So, the U.S. occupation of Iraq is illegal. And when asked, after Biden's little ballsy statement about Iran, if somebody asked Biden, well, why not impeach Bush and Cheney now? And Biden says, it may be potentially counterproductive. But if Bush goes ahead and bombs Iran, then, God, these people make me sick, especially Biden. I'd rather know my enemy. I'd rather confront a piglet like Sean Hannity than to confront some kind of a speaking out of both corners of his mouth, wild-eyed snot like Joe Biden. Biden believes, apparently, that Bush's crimes got to fit some certain category. He's already committed crimes. Biden, hey, Joe, there have been enough crimes committed by this son of a bitch and his partners in crime to impeach 30 presidents.
Well, if he bombs Iran, jigs up. Yep. If he bombs Iran... You think I'm going to sit here and put up with him bombing Iran? No, no, no. I'm chairman Foreign Relations Committee.
Which really doesn't mean anything, Sparky. All right, where are we? We have lots of people holding. Yeah, we sure do. Let's talk with Mike, who's called in from Newcastle, PA. Hey, Mike, welcome to the program.
How you doing, Mike?
I'm doing all right. How are you?
I'm doing great here. I'm doing great. I was calling. I told the screener there I wanted to... I don't think I heard, but yesterday you read the Declaration of Independence.
Right.
Then you had the caller, G, uh-huh. And you discussed something. Now, I understood your point. I wanted to comment about something interesting I learned when I was taking an African-American history class.
Okay.
That the original draft is readable. That Thomas Jefferson, in fact, I pulled it up on the internet before I called you, of course, because I didn't want to say anything stupid, because you have a very enlightened audience, too. But it can be found, Thomas Jefferson, Volume 1, D.C., Jefferson Memorial Association, 1903, pages 28 to 38. And what it is it's the original draft before the delegates changed the things they wanted to change.
Uh-huh.
Now, we all know Thomas Jefferson, he pushed to abolish slavery in 1800. He was ahead of the thing, but there's this two sentences that I just wanted to read you real quick.
Okay.
Okay. This is what was retracted out. Hold on to your seat. He has waged cruel war against human nature itself, violating its most sacred right of life, liberty, and the persons of a distant people who never offended him, captivating and carrying them into slavery in another hemisphere, or to incur miserable death in their transportation thither. This piratical warfare of, I can't even speak, opprobrium of infidel powers is the warfare of the Christian king of Great Britain, determined to keep open a market where men should be bought and sold. He has prostituted this negative for suppressing every legislative attempt to prohibit or to restrain this extra rural commerce. And there's another couple sentences. But the point made is that what you were trying...
Hold on, Mike, because this is very interesting.
Okay.
But I've got a break here.
Great.
So if you'll just hold on for a second, we'll come back and get you on the other side of the break, okay? All right, good. Stick around, folks. We'll be right back. I'm Mike Molloy. This is Nova M.
Next best thing to an impeachment hearing, it's Mike Molloy on Nova M Radio.
Twenty-five before the hour, we're talking with Mike in Newcastle, PA, who was quoting to us from the first draft of the Constitution. The Declaration of Independence before it was modified. So what you're saying then, Mike, is that Jefferson was accusing the King of England of perpetuating the slave trade.
Right, because I think with Jefferson in particular, he was more in that area where he wanted to get away from slavery. Because when you repeated what someone sent you regarding this earlier, that's what mm-hmm. piqued my interest, because the sentence after that was basically saying that the assemblage of horrors might one effect distinguished die. He is now exciting this very people to rise in arms among us and to purchase that liberty of which he has deprived them by murdering the people for whom he has obtruded them, thus paying off former crimes committed against the liberties of one people with crimes which urge them to commit against the lives of another. That's what I mean, is the times that he lived in, this is what he was dealing with. Mm-hmm. And the fact that you were pointing out, which is the point that I always like to make, is that the point of what is great about what went on at this time is that people of immense power who were taking on a new country,
Right. They
didn't put forth entirely self-serving agendas. They actually put forth an agenda that would limit their power, which is all you can really hope for. I mean, what do you want them to do? I mean, they mm-hmm. could have made a lot of other governments a lot less open to the evolution that, you know, it was only a couple of generations later that we had the Civil War. So,
and
our history is pretty short. But I thought that was that it's important to note that wasn't the final, that was the final draft of many drafts. And he actually, go ahead.
No, I was just going to say, that is very interesting. What's the website again?
Well, if you searched for it, if you just typed in original Declaration of Independence, I'm sure you'll find it.
Oh, okay.
I just went to a draft that was written from the writings of Thomas Jefferson, Volume 1, because from what I understand is he actually wrote it down in his own writings, where mm-hmm. he actually puts both side by side. Because,
right.
And I think because he wanted to make note of his position at the time. And this, like I said, this was brought to my attention through an African-American study class where the teacher or the professor was showing us that, you know, it's not, you got to look at the original documents, because mm-hmm. what they were saying isn't just what we see on the surface.
I'm glad you brought that up, Mike, because I've been totally, totally, totally ignorant of that, as I'm sure most people who are listening to the program. Thanks, Mike. I appreciate it. I hope you check in again. Good call. I appreciate what you had to say. That's interesting. I'm always awed by the quality of people who listen to this this program. Okay, not always. One of our correspondents writes in regarding the Sudanese yelling and screaming and calling to kill the teacher could be just the same as the crowd at a football match. A lot of noise and yelling and screaming, approval and vociferous disapproval in a crowd setting. Signed, Mike. Well, there's a difference, Mike. If a quarterback, when you talk football, I assume you're talking about American football. If a quarterback for the Eagles is dropped into the stands of a crowd that is cheering for the other team, I don't think the crowd is going to fall on the Eagles quarterback and rip him into bloody chunks. However, I'd be willing to bet you a Quran, a Bible, and maybe a copy of the Communist Manifesto, that if this school teacher would have been dropped into this mob of drooling psychopaths today as they rolled and tumbled out of their prayer services, they would have ripped her into little bloody chunks. So I'm sorry, I just don't agree with what you're saying, or your suggestion, I mean, that it, perhaps it's no more radical than screaming at a football match. Sorry, disagree. All right, we want to do Too Much Cappuccino Perino from the briefing today. Just three of them here, just to set your teeth on edge. You know, why should you all be comfortable while I'm in here working my ass off listening to this stuff? So we're going to make you uncomfortable, too. After Bush spouted the typical neocon rhetoric about AIDS in preparation for World AIDS Day tomorrow, doublespeak Dana took questions from the assembled glassy-eyed White House press corps, starting with one member of the press out of two or three who still show up there, who makes any sense. That would be Helen Thomas. She wanted to know when the troops would come home. When will the troops come home? She started asking McClellan that, didn't she? Scotty McClellan. And then she was asking the guy from Fox News Network. And now,
yeah, Foxy the Snowman. Well, first she started asking Ari Fleischer, why are we sending in the troops? Why is this legal? How is this constitutional? Mm. How is preemptive war possibly legal? So it started back in day one.
God, and she's still doing it. Good for you, Helen. Anyway, she wants to know when the troops will come home, since the Bush crime family has declared the surge a success. Listen, sometimes these are hard to hear, but listen as Helen gives Spinderella a taste of her own medicine. She starts out by saying, Dana, does the president want no troops out of Iraq on his watch?
Well, 5,700 troops will be home by the end of the year. So that is some troops coming home. The president said that troop levels are going to be made by commanders on the ground, and we're going to have to talk about
the American people have a say.
The American people have had a say. They elected a president who is their commander-in-chief and is making decisions based on what his commanders on the ground are telling him.
You think that was the vote from the American people?
They elected a commander-in-chief, and the president is bringing home 5,700 troops based on the recommendations of his commanders on the ground. And based on return on success, hopefully in the future we can bring home more, but it's going to depend on what General Petraeus reports, and remember, he will come back in March. Because he's the commander on the ground, Helen. He's the one who is making sure that the situation is moving.
How many more people we kill?
Helen, I find it really unfortunate that you use your front row position bestowed upon you by your colleagues to make such statements. It is an honor and a privilege to be in the briefing room, and to suggest that we, as the United States, are killing innocent people is just absurd and very offensive.
Oh, my God.
Do you know how many we have since the
war? How many? We are going after the enemy, Helen. To the extent that any innocent Iraqis have been killed, we have expressed regret for it.
Well, regret, it doesn't bring back a life.
Regret doesn't bring back a life. I'm sorry about the poor quality of that. The sound in there, I think, is deliberately kept mushy by the crack White House press corps so that you can't hear them being eviscerated by whoever the current spokesperson is for this corrupt crime family. Helen Thomas, I doubt, has anything to say about the sound quality inside that room. But for Dana Perino to say, and so to suggest that we at the United States are killing innocent people is just absurd and very offensive. And Helen Thomas says, do you know how many we have killed since the start of this war? And Perino says, how many? We're going after the enemy, Helen, to the extent that any innocent Iraqis have been killed. Any innocent Iraqis? We have expressed regret for it. And Helen says, oh, regret. That doesn't bring back a life. Dana Perino is not comedic. She is as much of a human flesh eater, as much of a heartless, evil son of a bitch as the people who put her out there. What a contemptible thing to say. What a vile, foul thing to do. To say to Helen Thomas, I find it unfortunate that you use your front row position to make such statements. And her statement was, how many more people are we going to kill? And then Perino says, this is an honor and a privilege to be in the briefing room. Son of a bitch! An honor and a privilege to stand before this little blonde member of the Hitler Youth as she feeds this garbage to the crack White House press corps. It's an honor and a privilege to be there. I don't like her, Dana Perino. I don't like her at all. This is a condescending, sarcastic, murderous little blonde Nazi.
Yeah, Helen Thomas has been in that briefing room about 50 years longer than Dana Perino, number one. It's insulting. And if it's such an honor and a privilege, how did the male hooker get in there?
Well, that wasn't on my watch. I'm Dana Perino. That wasn't on my watch. I have nothing to... Now that Helen Thomas smacked her down. Oh, we have a break? All right. The ditzy chick is going to handle a question here about Bush's AIDS initiative that you're going to love. Stick around. We have two of these left. And then back to your phone calls. I'm Mike Malloy. This is Nova M.
Against the flying monkey right with Mike Malloy.
Ten before the hour. All right, back to Too Much Cappuccino Perino at the briefing today. Again, now that the Helen Thomas smackdown concluded, then the ditzy chick faced this question about Bush's so-called AIDS initiative. The question was, Dana, what do you say to the concerns of activists protesting outside the White House that the president has not done enough to address an AIDS crisis in his own backyard? I wondered, do you know if the president himself is aware of the situation in Washington, D.C.? And how concerned is he about it on World AIDS Day?
Well, I think, as he said, you have the fact sheet. We are putting resources and money towards it. There is a need here in America, but there's also a need in other countries, including Africa, Latin America, and Asia. I would have to check in and see in terms of what the Department of Health and Human Services has in regards to the D.C. Situation. Clearly, the numbers that you read, I have to believe that those are accurate. It's disturbing and of a concern, and let us check with the Department of Health and Human Services and see what actions are being taken. He mentioned some that the doctor are taking, and so we'll check.
What? What was the stat that she was asked about, Kathy?
Well, apparently the AIDS rate is way, way up in D.C., and there were a bunch of protesters at the White House today saying, you know, Bush needs to turn some attention here instead of continuing to talk about Africa and Latin America.
Okay. Last one. On the continuing strain on our relations with China, which is pretty serious given how much of our debt they own. Reporter, several of them jump in here, so good luck hearing this. But the reporters asked Deep Dana Thrombosis, quote, any reaction to the word now, Dana, that a number of ships and even one U.S. aircraft carrier have been denied either port or landing rights in Hong Kong?
We are two very large countries, very powerful countries. We have a deep and mature relationship. We have open lines of communication, and we are taking advantage of those now so that we can establish better communication.
We're not talking about the same story we were talking about several days ago. This is new. They have now banned a port call in Christmas.
I understand that. And that's why I said that we are...
Talk to them. How come we haven't been able to work it out?
We've been communicating with them, and we are working to make sure that this situation can be resolved.
Why it's happening.
What I said the other day was that there was a misunderstanding or a miscommunication, whichever, you know, in my mind.
Trying to tone down the rhetoric on this to not be perceived as being too critical of the Chinese in a public setting like this?
No, what I'm expressing is we have a complicated relationship in some regards. We're two big countries. We have lots of issues regarding trade. We're working with them on a variety of issues at the UN, including the issues regarding Iran. We have military-to-military exchanges that we're working towards, and this relationship is growing and maturing, and this is something that two nations should be able to work through, and I don't think escalating it every day is necessary.
Well, what is the escalating? Is it the questions, Dana? Is that what's bothering you? And twice in the space of under a minute, she said, we are two big countries. We are two very large countries. Okay. And if you look out the window, Dana, most of the leaves are off the trees in Washington. And let me see what other profound truths we can come up with here. She says, what I'm expressing is we have a complicated relationship. We're two big countries. We have lots of issues regarding trade, like what, poison toys, poison toothpaste, poison animal feed, we're working with them on a variety of issues at the UN, including the issues regarding Iran. No, Dana, the Chinese are very happy with Iran. Iran has oil, which the Chinese need. And the Iranians need trade, which the Chinese have. There are no issues between Iran and China, Dana. Oh, God. Like I said, I'm convinced that Dana Perino, 70 years ago, was a member of the Hitler Youth. She was 15 years old and just looking for Jews that she could kill, and gypsies she could decapitate, and homosexuals she could eviscerate. And somehow she either slipped through a time warp and wound up as the White House press spokesman, or she was flash frozen and they just thawed her out, took away her German accent, and reactivated her. I've never seen anyone like this person. Two quick emails here. Megan Memphis. Mike, the Sudan teddy bear terrorists are the same people who are perpetrating genocide in their own country. This display, the rioting today, while it is the very definition of absurd, should not be surprising. A similar mania overtook Rwanda in 94. I heard on the radio today that some of the Rwandan Hutus are going to Sudan now to help. It's just too heartbreaking. And Tim in Denver, Mike, how does anyone get upset over a teddy bear's name? It's stuff like this that drives me crazy. Here's a quote from one of my favorite albums. This sort of behavior is left to the psychotic, dogmatic, fundamentalist believers you see on your TV. Every day letting bombs and killing people in the name of God. Beliefs are dangerous. Beliefs allow the mind to stop functioning. A non-functioning mind is clinically dead. Believe in nothing. Tim in Denver. We'll be back after the break with your phone calls. I'm Mike Molloy. All right, sing along. That's
like a bird
acceptable.
On a wire, like a drunk in a midnight choir. I have tried in my way to be free. Like a fish.
Welcome back. It's about 7 past the hour. This is the Molloy program on the Nova M radio network. A couple of emails from correspondents here during the break. I had seen this earlier today, forgot to mention it. And I bring it up now because I brought up the fact that Ehud Olmert, one of the participants, the Israeli prime minister, one of the participants in George Bush's toy peace conference and photo op, he was facing possible jail charges. Well, the police in Israel have dropped charges against Olmert. They said there are no grounds for laying corruption charges against the prime minister in connection with a bank privatization scheme. It was alleged 2 years ago that Olmert altered the terms of the sale of a bank to help a friend who was considering buying it. Olmert was finance minister at the time. Of course, he denied everything. However, Israeli police still are investigating two other cases in which Olmert is alleged to have, as the Israeli press puts it, behaved improperly. In one case, he is alleged to have appointed political allies to positions throughout the trade and industry ministry when he headed that ministry in 2003 and 2005, kind of like what Bush and Cheney do right now in this country. And in another, see, the police are investigating it in Israel. In this country, everybody goes, what? I'm sorry. In another case, police are investigating the purchase of a house in Jerusalem, which a government watchdog concluded was sold below market value by a developer. See, in Israel, they have police investigations, not hearings by little committees in the Knesset, but police investigations to find out if there's any criminal activity. Of course, they're different from us. In that regard, right? When we have a prime minister, in a manner of speaking, who lies us into a couple of wars, and, well, no point going down the list, not only do we not have police investigations, but any talk of investigations are immediately squashed unless the two principal perpetrators, George Bush and Dick Cheney, can testify before a commission, not under oath, and nobody gets to take notes. Sorry. Will in Chicago has clued me in as to the HIV crisis in D.C. This is from Reuters. The health and science editor wrote this. Washington, D.C. has the highest rate of AIDS in the U.S., and more babies are born with the AIDS virus in D.C. than in any other U.S. city, according to a report released 5 days ago. People in D.C. are not getting tested for HIV and show up with advanced infections that progress quickly to AIDS. The report found that Washington, with a population of about 600,000 people, has a rate of 128 AIDS cases per 100,000. The national rate is 14. Per 100,000. And Washington, D.C. accounted for almost 10% of all pediatric AIDS cases in the U.S. In the last year, the figures are available, 2005. The report said that the Washington, D.C. rate for newly reported AIDS cases is higher than rates in Baltimore, Philadelphia, New York City, Detroit, and Chicago. And the sad part, of course, of the 12,428 people infected with HIV in Washington, 80% are of African American. Are African American. More than 8,300 had fully progressed to AIDS, and 224 of them died of AIDS. Heterosexual contact in the district is the leading mode of HIV transmission. At 37% of newly reported infections, while nationally men who have sex with men lead new transmissions. But heterosexual contact, this is, some people still refer to it as the gay plague, right? Huh? Do you remember, do you remember when back in the 80s, in the mid-80s, where the Christian fundamentalist preachers, evangelicals in this country said that AIDS was God's curse on the sodomites? and they said it in a manner that you could almost hear the lip smacking and the hand rubbing as they stood up in their sanctified pulpits and notified their congregations that, see, this is what happens if you're queer. God will infect you with something that turns your organs into liquid.
I can remember being in high school in the 80s, telling my age there, and just dropping my mascara brush, getting ready for school one morning, because I had on some local TV channel early in the morning, just listening to whatever was on, and I heard this commercial that came on, and it said, God bless AIDS. God brought AIDS to the world to kill all the fags and the drug users,
too.
Oh,
yeah, that was
J.B. Stoner.
J.B. Stoner.
And my jaw dropped. This is about 1984 or 5.
Well, you know, one very good piece of news about that piece of blob, he's dead and has been for a while, but he was one of the people whose organization threatened my life. He's one of the people who's responsible for my getting a permit to carry a weapon. It was J.B. Stoner and that other guy who was a chiropractor of all things, Dr. Ed, I forget his last name. But these were the people right out here in Cobb County, which is one of the major, there are four major counties that make, or five that make up Atlanta. And Cobb County was just a hotbed of these filthy scum all the way up until the 80s, until they started dying. J.B. Stoner put together a radio commercial and got a couple of radio stations in Atlanta to play them based on freedom of speech or political ideas or freedom of religion or whatever, until finally the radio station said no, they were going to do it. Oh, I know what it was. He was a candidate for governor. And it was when he was running for governor, Kathy, that's how he was able to put that filth on the air. Thank God he finally just rotted away in his own filth. People like J.B. Stoner, these white supremacists. He was one of the people who I had maintained many times that if I ever met him in the street, I would shoot him first before I asked any questions. See, that's legal now here in Georgia. If you feel threatened, this is unbelievable. This is part of living in the South, you see. If you feel threatened by someone here in Georgia now, you have a right to kill them. You do. Whether they're it doesn't make any difference if they're armed. Doesn't make any difference if they're grabbing you around the throat. You now have the right to kill them. Yeah, that's where I live. So back in the day, before that was a matter of law, I feared these people so much, not in a cowardly sense, but feared what they were capable of doing. That's the reason I carried a gun and still do. I never let people know when I am so armed. But back in the day, when all this was going on, when J.B. Stoner, this bloated piece of human waste, was still alive, I was convinced that if I ever saw him on the street, the first thing I do would shoot him dead, because I knew he was armed too. And then I would just say, well, you know, he threatened me. God, I hate talking like that. I just hate it. But yeah, I'd forgotten that the thug's name, Dr. Ed, what was his name? And these people were not like the that Baptist church group out of Kansas City, Reverend Phelps. You know, they're clownish, they're cartoon figures, the ones that just had the massive lawsuit against them for you know, holding up their God hates fag signs at funerals for American GIs. But Phelps and his inbred family are cartoons. J.B. Stoner and the rest of these people here in Metro Atlanta were absolute. J.B. Stoner was one of the people that was responsible for the bombing of the school of the church in Birmingham that killed the four little black kids. J.B. Stoner was a murderous Nazi, and when he ran for the governorship here, he got several hundred thousand votes. That's where I live. And some of you people wonder why I, who hate guns, why I am usually completely armed, get real.
Gives a damn about the future of children. Just building a cash flow, making a bank account. Let us expose the truth. Is that what the world's
don't
about?
Go to bed angry. Let Mike Malloy do it for you on Nova M Radio.
21 past the hour. Back to your phone calls here, as promised. Where are we? Bruce is calling from California, listening on the internet. Hey, Bruce.
Mike, good evening.
Hi.
I wanted to take a little exception to a comment you made about us having to drastically cut back on our lifestyle in order because of global warming or the threat. And the reason that I called is because I just don't see that that's necessary. First of all, it requires energy from another source. If you look at an African country or any place where they're not using anything but human power or maybe an occasional animal, you see the lifestyle that they have. We have to have more energy in order to do the things that we do. I mean, if you didn't have energy to run a washing machine, you'd have to be pounding clothes on a rock. So, you know, cutting the lifestyle back would destroy the who we are, what we built.
Well, it's the source of energy. It's
right.
Not
well, that's
energy.
What I was getting to.
Yeah, energy itself is not destroying us. I mean, every time I get out of bed, I'm using energy.
Right. Me too. I start to feel it more and more every day, too. I wanted to bring up something that to your listeners, that there is a nextenergynews.com. There's a story about a 30-year continuous power laptop computer battery. It works. I'm going to go real quickly here, but it uses the decay of the radioactive material decays and emitting beta particles, and that transforms into electric power. And it's a consistent, constant power that lasts for 30 years off of a battery. They're expected to be marketed between 2 and 3 years, in 2 to 3 years from now.
Yeah.
There's a car, anybody that's interested in the most fantastic electric car that was ever built, TeslaMotors.com, T-E-S-L-A,
right.
And they run on lithium-ion laptop computer batteries that are all hooked in series and parallel to provide the power that they need. And if you can just imagine a 30-year battery put into the Tesla car, it's just mind-boggling. Never needs recharging for 30 years, and you just drive. Nothing, you wouldn't use any fuel at all.
Yeah, I should have been more clear in
right.
what I was saying. I certainly don't believe in, I'm not a Luddite. I don't believe that we should immediately disconnect ourselves from the grid. If somebody wants to do that, go ahead. I can't do that, though, and very few people I know can do that. And even the people who are living off the grid are also finding sources of energy. It's just that they are using sources of energy that make more sense. So
make a quick comment here?
Sure.
I want to blow my own horn for a minute. I have patented the first and only system that uses ocean hydrothermal vents for generating commercial quantities of electricity.
Really?
And it absolutely is a phenomenal thing. The energy available is just astounding. One vent system could provide 30 gigawatts, which is equivalent to about 62% of the entire state of Florida's generating capacity.
Well, who's beating a path to your door to start marketing this?
Well, no one yet, because I haven't published it. I'm trying to get it published right now.
Oh,
that's my objective. Once it's published and once the entire thing is hopefully made available to the energy industry and they see what it is, I expect, regardless of interest here a huge interest overseas, China, Korea, Japan, India.
I hope you understand, and I don't mean to get weird here, but you understand the danger that you're in.
Well, the patent is already, I don't think so, because the patent is a government document, and once it's published, and once it, in fact, you know, it can be published, my wife could publish it after I'm dead, you know. I mean, there's nothing to stop that from happening, so I'm not.
Okay,
and,
I'm just talking about the powers that be,
right.
quote,
right.
Who would hate to see someone like you come along and carry a patent on something that will completely end the hydrocarbon industry.
Yeah, if you can find time, I'd love to talk to you on air about it, and give you a full description of what it is and how it works. It's quite phenomenal. There are things on the horizon that could literally make the energy industry as we know it a thing of the past, the us being hostages to it, mm-hmm. in that sense, a thing of the past.
Well, it sounds wonderful. I hope what you're doing gets the kind of backing or the kind of exposure that's absolutely necessary.
I'm working on it. That's all I can do. I've been turned down by most of the major magazines, but Popular Science, Discover, and Scientific American, primarily because all three of them said the same thing. They don't cover stuff in the concept stage. They want something that they can kick tires on and take pictures of, and or something that has a licensing agreement that they can talk about. Or,
well, I'll tell you what, it may take a while till we get to it, but Bruce, send me an email with just a few lines of information, and I'll ask Kathy to get in touch with you, and we'll do something on the air. I got to leave it there, but send me an email. You know how to do that. Thanks, Bruce. We'll be back after the break. I'm Mike Malloy.
Friends at the NSA and Homeland Security, and listen to Mike Malloy every single night. They never miss a minute.
Yeah, they don't. 25 before the hour. Back to your calls here. RW is calling from Chattanooga, Tennessee. RW, welcome to the program. Hey, RW.
Hey, what's up?
Hey, you are.
Oh, I was going to talk about global warming and stuff like that, but just touch on something real quick about the gentleman, my name, Mike. He brought up the whole Declaration of Independence.
Uh-huh.
In a related vein, there is an old book that's out of date. It's from the early part of the 20th century called Constitutional Chaff. And it's the notes from the Constitutional Convention, which was never meant to be published.
Mm-hmm.
And in it, it goes over, and you can read about all the alternative ideas that were floating around during the Constitutional Convention. You know, things like, you know, somebody had the idea instead of having a president, we'd have a 7-member executive committee.
Uh-huh.
You know, crazy thing, you know, that almost might have happened.
Uh-huh.
And when you get to the 3/5 clause section, it's really interesting because it's got all the different speeches and stuff. You know, slavery, people forget slavery was a huge issue in the Constitutional Convention. We almost did not have. You know, we almost did not form over that, or if we would have, it would have been just almost only in the northern states, because
mm-hmm.
people like Governor Morris and others were just slamming the antebellum South over the issue of slavery.
Right.
So, you know, people do not realize that, yes, even back then there were people who were raising that issue and fighting hard for it, but, unfortunately we made the decision, our founding fathers made the decision, you know, hey, you know, we need the southern states to, you know,
mm-hmm.
to sustain ourselves as a union and made that compromise. But a lot of people were not, you know, even then were not happy with it.
Yeah, which I find interesting. That is a part of our my own country's history that I have a vague echo of a memory of an instructor or professor or a high school teacher somewhere along the way maybe dropping that into a discussion, but obviously it never made an impression on me because when the caller mentioned it tonight, it was just totally new to me that as far back as the Declaration of Independence, there was this issue of white colonials who were deeply opposed to slavery. So it's good to know that for sure. Even though I have to state my ignorance about that until the guy called tonight.
Mm-hmm. Well, the other thing is that you were talking about the we have to whether or not we should change our ways and stuff like that. Look, folks, we live in we do a lot of crazy things. You know, like your own city of Atlanta, it's the Chattahoochee's drying up, and what are they doing? They decide they're going to build a skating rink and truck in water from Kentucky, crazy stuff, We have people who've got electric, hand cream warmers, because they don't want cold lotion on their hands,
There's
a lot of things we can do without, old-fashioned, in our household, I'm not a Luddite. I haven't listened to you on the net. But you know what? We decided to do without a dryer. We just hang our clothes up.
Right.
And on things like that, we can use more mass transit in this country.
Oh, my God. We don't have any mass transit in this country.
Especially in the South.
Oh, my Lord. We have plenty of interstates, but we don't have mass transit. We don't have...
Make our cities more bike-friendly and... where people can ride their bikes,
Light rail, more heavy rail, more, this is the only industrialized country that I'm aware of that has such a crappy rail system. We don't have a rail system here. What the hell is Amtrak?
Yeah, so. and the thing is, in a country where people are overweight, do we really need leaf blowers? I mean, why don't you get out with a rake? I mean, come on. You're looking for a solution to hand, hair dryers? Hey, we discovered this wonderful thing. It's called towels. I mean, come on.
There you go. There you go. I know. RW, thanks, man.
No problem.
I appreciate you checking in. Take care. When he's talking about hand warmers, oh, my God. I remember one Christmas, my mother bought me a hand warmer. I must have been about 10 or 11. I had a paper out from the time I was 8 and in Toledo, Ohio, and it used to get cold up there. And she bought me a hand warmer. And this thing had a little flame in it. It had lighter fluid and a wick. And you lit it, literally lit it, and slid the top back on. And it had a little, Kathy sitting there with her eyebrows going up, her teeth gritting, had little holes in it, for, like a vent. And I would light that before I left the house and put it in my pocket. And as I made my rounds at, 5:36 in the morning through... 8 feet of snow, at least it seemed that way, delivering those damn papers, I had that little hand warmer. And it certainly was energy efficient, I guess, or not energy efficient, but it was non-polluting, because when I got real cold, I would just take it out and warm my hands and then get intrigued with the smell of burning lighter fluid and sit there and smell it and get high. Oh, my God.
How old are you?
106. And as far as, a mass transit system, it's astonishing. And I think we're all in agreement that the auto and the gasoline or oil industry prevented trains in this country, coast to coast, border to border, rapid rail. If we had a parallel rail system, think about this for a second, to every interstate. Now, I know this is probably impossible from an engineering standpoint, but just in theory, a parallel rail system, parallel to every interstate in the country. If it's Interstate 10 that goes from Jacksonville, Florida to L.A., okay, then you have a rail system that goes along that. If I can remember writing this, what was called at the time the Southern Crescent. Amtrak has it now, but it went from Boston to New Orleans once a day, spent the night in New Orleans, turned around and went back. And the first time I rode that in the dining car There were linen napkins and silver and crystal goblets and flowers on the table. Seriously. Don't ask me again how old I am. But it was incredible stuff. And we don't have a rail system in this country. Look what's happening to the aviation industry. Now, I don't know which is more energy efficient. It would seem to me power generated with something other than oil or gas to power electric trains, or I'm sorry, other than oil or coal, to power electric trains is entirely feasible. A lot of people are talking nuclear power again. Be careful where you go with that one. I know a lot of progressives are talking about redeveloping or getting into, once again, in a safer way, nuclear power. I don't think there's any way to do it safely. I guess we need this. We're getting to the point where we're going to have to balance the risks on that, I guess, because geothermal or wind power or solar power or hydropower just doesn't seem to be something that we can get our minds around, whereas we can with nuclear power. But can just imagine a rail system, electric trains, that ran across this country, north and south, east and west, in pretty much straight lines, like the interstates do. Sure. Hand warmers, RW. I remember those hand warmers. Oh, my God. Joe is calling from Georgia, listening on Sirius Satellite Radio. Hey, George, Joe.
Hey, Mike. Thanks for taking my call.
Sure, absolutely.
One of the things I was thinking of when you was talking about changing our way of living and everything, and you know, back in 1930s or so, when they decided that marijuana was an evil plant, and they decided to wage a war against it. you know, Henry Ford built a car made out of hemp that would run on hemp. I don't know why he did it or whatever, but my point is an acre of hemp would create 20 barrels of oil, which would in turn produce 840 gallons of gasoline to fuel a car.
Yeah.
And hemp is also a petroleum base, which you could make rubber, plastics out of. You can make food and medicines. I mean, it's just an endless thing here. And, you know, one of the biggest problems that we're having right now is I think oil companies have a strong hold on our politics. And
you think?
Yeah, I think so. I think I finally come to that conclusion. But, you know, and what it would do, it was, you know, I mean, could you picture it? You know, we grow our own hemp, produce our own clothing again, you know, make our own plastics, make our own rubber. How many jobs, you know, I mean, how many jobs that would create? You know, we'd get off foreign oil and we'd start our, you know, building our industrial back. You know,
I hear like, you. Well,
but,
Joe,
you know,
Joe, I got to leave there. These are all good ideas, pal, and they certainly make sense. I know hemp has the potential of setting us free. Plus, if you... No, never mind. We'll be back after the break. I'm Mike Malloy. 10 before the hour. Mayflower Mike emails in that, and he apparently was on the President's Transportation Commission over a number of years through four administrations. Rail systems are 40 times more fuel efficient than air, 20 times more fuel efficient than trucks. Well, there you go. Which explains a lot, I guess, as to why it was never developed to the extent that it should have been. Because the oil industry said, no, 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 no. All right. Thanks to the crew, Ian Huff, who our associate producer and engineer, who answers your calls also in Phoenix at the flagship station, KPHX. Also, Billy Foster of Nova M Radio, who... does just about everything else around this network. Chris in Minnesota, our senior correspondent. Catherine Bagg, executive producer. Good job this week, crew. Thank you all very much for making the show sound as weird as it is. Matthew is calling from Bedford, Texas, listening on the Internet. Matthew, welcome to the program.
Hey, Mike. It's never easy watching the debates, and I don't think in this day and age it is for anyone. And, you know, hearing a lot of people talking about the debates. And it's even harder when your own side is showing itself to be as guilty of the disgusting things that the, as I call them, the enemies of our political process, the Republicans, are. What people, a lot of people are forgetting is that when you're looking at a debate and you're looking, oh, I like Clinton, I like Hillary, I like Obama, they're all political opportunists. And they're all wanting the power that we want to get, that we give them. And so philosophy should be, shouldn't our philosophy be, which for most Gore supporters it is, you know, don't get people in who want power, draft someone who doesn't want it. And so, you know, I mean, why, so the question must be asked, and for you, how is it that we as people, as liberals, as progressives, can be sitting on our butts while a perfectly viable candidate is kind of hem-hawing about, I don't want to run, when he's really the only, he's, at least in a lot of people's opinions, he's the only real way to go here.
Mm-hmm.
So how is it that we can be just standing by when we're watching these ridiculous things, oh, Hillary and Obama, who cares about them?
Right.
I mean, I honestly, I'm not going to vote unless Gore gets on the ticket. And that's because I cannot stand Hillary. I'm sorry to Hillary supporters. But, and, you know, I know a lot of people like the mainstream candidates, fine. But we need to get behind somebody who actually cares about this country, right?
Are you there, Matthew? Matthew? What happened to Matthew? Are you there, Matthew? Oh, gosh, we lost Matthew. All right. Well, Matthew, let me answer if you're still listening on the Internet. You're right. Most of these people are political opportunists. There are several in the campaign. I'm talking about the Democratic side. The Republicans are all just scum. There are several on the Democratic side that I genuinely believe are not political opportunists. They are there because they are answering what they consider to be a perhaps a higher calling. I even think there's one on the Republican side, believe it or not, and that would be Huckabee. I wouldn't vote for Huckabee in a million years, but I don't believe he is a political opportunist as you meant. But... yeah, I watch how media are treating the horse race that they have created between Hillary and Barack Obama, and occasionally they allow John Edwards into the race. And I want to gouge my eyes out or gouge somebody's eyes out because it's infuriating, absolutely infuriating. How this is being handled by this corrupt, filthy media that we have. Dave is calling from North Carolina, listening on Sirius Satellite Radio. Hey, Dave.
Hey, how are you?
I'm doing fine.
Hey, I just wanted to make a comment on your whole rail theory idea with the big oil taking over that industry. How many Walmarts do you see backed up to a railroad tracks, or how many shopping malls do you see backed up to railroad tracks? Obviously none.
Yeah, for the most part, because the railroad tracks don't exist.
Right, exactly. So you need trucks to deliver the stuff.
Wait. I'm not trying to advocate against truck drivers. Dear God, I mean, rail can only take it so far. I understand that. I'm talking about moving people. Trucks are not designed. You're talking about over the road trucks. They're not designed to move people.
Right.
They're designed to move move product, to move commerce. You misunderstood me.
Well, then that's a misunderstanding. And the whole reason for the airplanes and stuff like that is because people are too lazy to do stuff for themselves nowadays. You know.
I don't think it's lazy. I think that people, Dave, are in such a damn big ass hurry that they think that if they spend an hour driving to the airport and an hour and a half standing in line and getting through security, and then an hour driving when they get to the new airport to wherever they're going, if they take that 4 hours, that somehow they're ahead on their 2 hour flight. It's insane. Dave, I got to leave there. Thanks, man. Thanks for checking in. And thank you for participating in the program this week, however you did that. I do appreciate it. I'll see you Monday, okay? Take care. Keep it lit. I'm Mike Malloy. This is Nova M Radio. And have a great weekend, Kevin Kinney, wherever you are.